What profit a man in his all-troubled run, at which he is working hard under the sun? An age will be passing, the age that presides, the earth that is standing forever abides. That was from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 3 and 4 of the translation by yours truly from 2004. That's our daily scripture for today, little children. And we have the continuation of our work studying the Trojan War article. We're in chapter 12, paragraph 8. And detailed study, it says there, of the radiocarbon work published up to 2015 has revealed an excellent agreement with our own. Consideration of Jericho and many other ancient cities proves that confidence in our chronology is justified. This is the work of chapter 8 with notebook excerpts. The graph from chapter 8 shows that radiocarbon dating, which is the vertical axis, showing years in years BP, which means before present, which is the standard way of measuring radiocarbon, and it dates before the present, meaning before the year 1950, which is the convention in radiocarbon dating. And when we plot the measurements of Mr. Brock Ramsey on this graph, with the horizontal axis being BCE date or chronology for the different measurements, which were done for dynastic Egypt, meaning the pharaohs of Egypt in their different dynasties, we got, according to this graph, very good agreement, we saw, with those radiocarbon measurements. And even with the measurement by Mr. Levy in 2005, shown by the eyeball symbol here, which was a measurement from the so-called Solomon's Mines at Kerbet and Nahas, in the lower right corner here, that point appears on the graph, and it falls very close to the line also. So this line looks like a very good proof that the radiocarbon is capable of coming reasonably close to the chronology, especially in the case of the genealogy, which is our chronology. It comes even closer than it did with the chronology that was used by Mr. Brock Ramsey when he modeled this series of data points using the Bayesian modeling system according to the chronology of Shaw from 2000. And Shaw's numbers are also shown indirectly by the straight line in the very light gray color, as we see on the graph also, where it falls slightly above our line in the later dates, and on the earlier dates it falls slightly below our line. But when we see the fit that is given by our line compared to the light gray line, with our line being the dark black line, we notice that our line is actually a better fit for the data in most cases. And that was reflected also in the chi-squared calculation that we did, which showed a probability of 67% that the data points represent the distribution with 26 degrees of freedom, or in other words 27 data points, no sorry 30 degrees of freedom, which means 31 data points, If the chi-squared value was 26, which is less than the number of degrees of freedom, that's always a good sign. So the chi-squared value of 26 compared to, in the case of Mr. Shaw, 29, is a better chi-squared value for the same number of degrees of freedom, 30. And for Mr. Shaw's line, it was 52% probability of being a true representation of the chi-squared distribution, which, you know, it just validates the data. It makes it, it gives us more confidence. So 52% was not bad in his case, but for us it was 67%. We would typically be happy if it was above 5%, because if it's below 5%, it makes us doubt that the data is really good quality data, whereas being above 5%, at least, well, it could be very reasonable, even though not as likely as when it's above 60%, like in our case, 67%, 15% better in our case than in the case of Mr. Shaw's chronology used as a modeling chronology. And that's because the chronology gives the distance in time between the different pharaohs, and that's used to impact how the modeling program determines the center of the radiocarbon peak in each case. So because these peaks are spread, sometimes smeared across the time frame or across the horizontal axis, which is the time or years BCE, it becomes more difficult to resolve the exact date of the year one of that pharaoh or things such as that unless you know the distance between the pharaohs. And that's what our chronology did, apparently better than Mr. Shaw's, as we noted the differences later in Chapter 8 with regard to the certain pharaohs that were most affected by that, such as Thutmose III, for example. And the distance between Thutmose III and Amos I, which did have a deleterious effect on the result of the dating of Amos I, in the case of using Shaw's chronology. In our case, we believed that it would result in a much closer much better assessment, which agreed exactly almost with our chronology when we used our chronology to do the modeling. But we didn't actually do the calculations. It was so we don't know what Mr. Ramsey would have obtained had he used our chronology precisely. We don't know that, but it seems reasonable that what we did was a good estimate of what would have happened had he used a better chronology such as the genealogy to model his data. It just seems better because it fits better with all the other facts in the case of our chronology, that we've established by more than one means the dating of our chronology. So let's go back now just to take a look at Chapter 8, because we see some interesting things mentioned in Chapter 8 in the beginning of that chapter particularly. And radiocarbon is very useful, whereas Christine Tetley, for example, in her book, didn't believe much in the value of radiocarbon, putting it number 11 on her list of chronological resources. But when we looked at Mr. Wardle's radiocarbon work at Assyros Tumba in Greece, we saw that his work would result in a raising of all the late Bronze Age dates, you know, at the beginning of the Iron Age, by about 80 or so years, 80 or so, you know, 70, 80, whatever, 50, 60, 70, 80. and that would change all the dates and raise them, which would also cause any dates that came lower in the chronology to be pulled up, because, you know, because we know roughly the reigns of each pharaoh, so it affects all the reigns that come after. However, it also works in the opposite direction from what the modern trend is, which is to bring all the pharaohs lower and lower. So that's why it's so important, this work by Mr. Wardle, which raised the date. And we saw here, from about the adjustment that was proposed, includes the region about the middle of the second millennium, or 1500 BCE, which is roughly the time of Amos, 1550 being his year one, or 1552 to 1551 being his year one in the genealogy. So 1500 is close to that. And one of the consequences of raising the date for this era is that, interestingly, we said in paragraph 1 of chapter 8, the pottery which had been previously associated with the new kingdom of Egypt is now clearly updated to the Hyksos dynasty. Updated meaning dates to an earlier time. It's relegated to that earlier dynasty of the Hyksos, who ruled from about 1640 until 1532 BCE in the genealogy, and they reigned in the northern part of Egypt, while there was already also an Egyptian dynasty ruling at Thebes in the south, so we believe. And then Amos conquered the Hyksos in 1532 or 1533 BCE and cast them out of Egypt. So the Hyksos dynasty, which was, according to the Turin canon, 108 years, would be about 1640 to 1532 BCE. If that's correct, I think the Turin canon said 108 years, but I think that's the right number. But I'm basing that because I know the other dates, 1640 and 1532. So I would have already done that calculation. The Turin canon is certainly, it's not even critical, I suppose. But it's important, but not absolutely critical. How many years long the Hyksos dynasty was, but it's always better if we know. But the Turin canon seems to be the best evidence of it, compared to Manetho being usually a lot less accurate than well, with regard to the total number of years for certain dynasties such as that one. Actually, Manetho is in some cases extremely accurate, but for the case of the Hyksos, it's not the case. But the Turin canon, anyway, I think that, I just can't, I'm thinking of the number 103 for some reason. I don't really know if I should take the time to look it up right now, but let's look it up here. Look it up here on, since we have the encyclopedia right here with us. Let's look up. It's called the Turin canon, the Turin king list. Okay, Turin king list, same thing. The Turin king list I personally, in order to remain neutral, I can't donate to any organization, so it's just not possible. We can just cancel that. Okay, all right, so we look at this, and we look at the number of years. We're looking for the number of years total. for the Hyksos dynasty in particular. Okay, so this is not just the one dynasty. So it might come back to my memory and then I won't have to look it up, but let's go to Google if we can here. Okay. How many years, Turin-Canon, Hyksos dynasty? Hundred and 8 years. It says there in the Encyclopedia that's from Britannica, of which I have an older set in hard copy, but I don't use my hard copy encyclopedia unless I guess my internet ever was completely down, which it never is, but generally anyway. So I think the 108 is from the Turin Canon, but let's see if we can find out by looking here. What if we go to the Britannica website and look up Turin? There it is. They mention the 108 years, and then they say the Hyksos had ruled as pharaohs and were listed as legitimate kings in the Turin Papyrus. So, and we know they ruled over the north, which included the city of Avaris, until Avaris almost conquered Avaris in, we know it was 1532, not 1521, which is what they say, but 1532 doesn't fit the facts as well as 1521 doesn't fit like 1532 in our chronology, which fits better because of our year one for Amos being probably significantly higher than what Britannica. I mean, we're not following what Britannica says. Yeah, they have that the Hyksos ruled from about 1630 to 1530. So they're saying 1521, but they're saying approximately 1530 for the end of that dynasty. So their numbers aren't even consistent among themselves. So we don't have to take it with any kind of serious, consideration. We don't have to be too concerned about that. But, in some cases we would have to pursue it further to make sure we know what they're saying. But we already know that there are some people who believe that Amos... There are many people who believe that Amos reigned later than what we have him. However, we also know that there's enough evidence to substantiate the dates in the genealogy that we don't need to listen to those other sources. And they're always going to recommend a different number, too, from the traditional dating, because, by the way, which dating was, as far as the traditional dates go, for Amos, 1550, year one. But they're in the modern times always proposing a different dating from the modern traditional, sorry. The modern is always proposed as a new, everything always has to be new and different, right? So they're always proposing a new dating scheme. It's just a fad or it's a trend, a fashion trend. Whether you go with it or not depends on whether you want to have to change again when the next fad takes its place. So you can't always be changing everything just because the fashion dictates. The thing about fashion is this, okay? The way that fashion works is as follows. You're either following the fashion trends or you're setting the fashion trends. There's no other way other than those. Or else, I guess you just forget about paying attention to it. But you're either setting it, deciding what it is, and then other people follow you, or you're following other people. There's no two ways. You have to choose one of those two. So it's always better to make up your own mind than to let other people make up your mind for you. But the work by the researchers who studied the Hyksos dynasty and who studied Egyptian chronology is important here to determining this time period around 1500. Stuart Manning desired to date the late Minoan 1A period, 80 years higher at least. And these were dates that Pat Betancourt, is it Pat Betancourt? I think it's Pat, but P. Betancourt anyway. These dates were dates that were derived by P. Betancourt 15 years earlier, meaning he worked 15 years earlier to derive the years 80 years higher. And he was working in, Mr. Betancourt was working in 1987, but he worked backwards from the late Helladic 3A2 shards at Amarna, it says there. So it's very interesting here to learn about how the Egyptian chronology developed over time, and a lot of the work of Mr. Betancourt's is still valuable even now. It's not out of date. A lot of the work never goes out of date when it's especially well done. But the late Minoan is considered in the time period of the 1A pottery a high point of Minoan civilization. It's a very, very celebrated time period historically, and that's why that's so important, that the dating of the radiocarbon now associates that pottery along with the Hyksos pottery as being of the same period of time earlier by 80 years. Because, you know, otherwise we would associate this Minoan civilization apex with the time of Ahmose instead of with the Hyksos dynasty. So, or the time of, you know, some of the later kings that came just a little later. In and around the time of the New Kingdom, okay? Which is, the New Kingdom began in about 1550 in Egyptian chronology. That's a date, 1550, which is a nice round number. It's probably not necessary to change that as being the beginning of the New Kingdom. And even the kings that preceded Ahmose, such as Khamos and his predecessor also, they ruled in the south of Egypt, and they were part of the dynasty that is separate from the Hyksos dynasty. So the New Kingdom began, though, when Ahmose ruled, because he was the one who conquered and cast out the Hyksos in about year 19 of his reign. So that's what we have. But the dates of some pottery periods now are being raised by 50 to 150 years by retrospective studies where radiocarbon is now contextually well understood. And so there's a lot of retrospective studies, and so in other words, armchair scientists who work reevaluating all the data from the radiocarbon, comparing with the pottery, and doing all kinds of work like that. And they could be on-site archaeologists too, of course. But Mr. Betancourt's late Helladic 1A was tentatively 1700 to 1610, I wrote there. And his late Helladic 3B, roughly 1365 to 1200. That's curious, because that means late Helladic 3C begins with or involves the Bronze Age, isn't that interesting? But let's go. I think we have to go back or forward. Which is it? I think it's we have to go forward to chapter 9 to find out. Yeah, in chapter 9, I think we saw possibly chapter 9 somewhere. Here it is. Here, okay. This is chapter 8, actually. Yeah, chapter 8. So we're still reviewing chapter 8. We go down to table 1 by Betancourt, 1987. You see the late Helladic 1A, which is also late Minoan 1A. 1700 to 1610 BCE. But when you look down at the late Helladic 3B, which ended in 1200 at the bottom of the table, that indicates the end of Bronze Age, because 1200 is, at least traditionally, the beginning of Iron Age, the end of Bronze Age. But, I mean, and I should say, Mr. Betancourt was raising these dates for these time periods generally, or at least raising the beginning of these time periods, at least, and if not the entire time period. But I'm trying to. I've never really studied. I mean, there's so many things to study. I've never really thought about it much, whether late Helladic 3C was the beginning of Iron Age or not. I mean, in the traditional chronology, there's so many things to know about. Here it is, look. Yeah, okay, but this, Mr. Wardle's work significantly raised late Helladic 3C from the conventional date of 1200, which is not necessarily going to be adopted by us, or, you know, it might not be true, but he raised it to at the latest 1282, by 82 years it was raised. For late Helladic 3C beginning. And that was correlated to the Trojan War. On Troy 6, which was destroyed according to the work by Mr. Michael Wood in about 1275, and after we adjusted it for our chronology, according to him, I believe it was more like 1250 or something like that, but very similar dates for the end of that Troy level 6 stratum or city at Troy. So fascinating, because we have the Trojan War ending in 1275, and that's from Michael Wood, In Search of the Trojan War. Very beautiful series of YouTube videos are made by Mr. Wood on the Trojan War, even though we don't exactly agree with his chronology. Still, we can learn, because he dates the Hittite kings differently, so we adjust the Hittite king chronology according to our Hittite king chronology, and then we get this, the appropriate corresponding date for the end of Troy 6 as 1275. But it was based on the pottery too for Troy 6. Like the, let's look up, okay, let's look up 3B first of all, right, see what we find there. Troy 6 city pottery imports included Mycenaean 3B wares near its end. So that was talking about 3B. So therefore, the late Helladic 3B must have begun before 1275, which was the end of Troy. In fact, before 1285, because the Trojan War was 10 years long. Or Troy, let's just say that in some versions of the Trojan War, it was 10 years long. The siege lasted for years because the city of Troy was very well fortified. So in order for them to get pottery into the city, it would have had to have been before the siege. So probably more like around before 1282 is reasonable, which is actually the date to which the L3B had been raised by Mr. Wardle in his radiocarbon work, right? Which is only, it's only a rather approximate date as far as radiocarbon goes. So that's really all we have to talk about today for Chapter 8, I think. And we always are fascinated with the power of the genealogy when we study this, because the Jubilee cycle was very powerfully incorporated into the genealogy with the beginning of the Jubilee cycle in 1422 BCE in the BG. And that resulted in the exact, accounting of many other events that followed, all the way down to the destruction of Jerusalem in 582 BCE by Nebuchadnezzar. So that's it, though. We have another couple of minutes. I just don't want to start anything too big at this point. But yeah, we might take a break from studying the articles at some point. And then I can talk about some of the other things like heating and ventilating, air conditioning, HVAC, or whatever, different things that some other things like that. Because, for example, if you live in a very hot house or hot environment in your dwelling and you want to get an air conditioner, then there are some things that might be useful to know before you make a purchase. But you can use an air conditioner, like I was saying yesterday, as a dehumidifier too, and at least the ones that I bought. I have two air conditioners, and I'm thinking of buying a third one, but I recently got a commercial yesterday. Yesterday I got a commercial dehumidifier, which has been running in the basement now, and seems to be working. So we'll see, but also I had to remove the rust from the top of my water pressure tank. It just slightly starts to get surface rust, and then if you clean it off with the anti-rust, water-based anti-rust, which I have, made by Crud Cutter, it's called Must for Rust, and it's water-based, beautiful stuff. I love it because it's very inexpensive, and you get lots of it for that price, and you can just, wipe it off your hands. It's not even very harmful to the hands. You don't even need to wear any rubber gloves necessarily, but you don't want to do anything too much in contact with your skin. But it's just beautiful stuff. It converts the rust into metal, but it also can be used to clean it, wipe it right off, so you can, before it even starts, which is really important when you have high humidity above 50%, that all your metal, your steel, that is, will rust. So it's August 27th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 15:18 hours Eastern Daylight Time in North America. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Lib Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now. Thank you for listening and watching.